Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Web Sleuth Radio. My name is Tricia Griffith, and I don't know about you all, but I am feeling really freaked out. Years ago, when I was a disc jockey, I was involved in a hostage situation. Basically, a guy took a room full of hostages and called me on the radio and demanded I do things, blah, blah, blah. It ended up okay. The hostage taker was killed. He had a real bomb. All the hostages were saved. And it's actually going to be a big two-hour recap special coming up in the summer, even though it happened over 20 years ago. They're going to do a big re-dramatization of the whole thing. Anyway, at that time when that happened, when that man took those hostages and then demanded that I play some songs for him, I thought, I'm surprised this doesn't happen more often. You know, crazy people just getting it in their minds that they want to go on the radio and taking hostages. And it really didn't. It really didn't happen after that. And I feel the same way about the Facebook killer. It's like, hey, this is really the first time that somebody has uploaded just this random, god-awful killing. But it's like, I'm surprised it hasn't happened yet, and I would not be shocked at all to see it continue to happen. Again today, we had a shooter down in Fresno killed three people while he was muttering the phrase, Allah Akbar. So it's just all around us. It's craziness, it's mental illness, and I don't know how to speak. And I'm hoping our guest can give us some clues, something to make us feel better and maybe feel safe again. I'd like to welcome Dr. Peter Langman. Dr. Langman is the most sought-after expert on the psychology of school shooters. In fact, his website, schoolshootersinfo.info, has everything that you need to understand about school shooters. And we're taking it out of the school shooters area and putting it into just the people on the street shooters. And there's a lot we can apply here that Dr. Langman can help with. And Dr. Langman, thank you so much for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me.
And now, the last time you were on, we were talking about the Slender Man killings. That was where the two early teenage girls took a friend out in the field and stabbed her multiple times, all the while saying they were doing it for the fictional character Slender Man. And I thought, you know, I don't think we can get any crazier than that, but we have. Steven Stevens was the man who decided to shoot a random individual. And that random individual was the father of, I believe, 10 and grandfather of 14, self-taught mechanic. His name was Robert Goodwin. He had just been enjoying an Easter dinner. I mean, just cute and adorable, just like your wonderful grandpa would be, walking home, minding his own business, when Steven Stevens decided that he was mad at his girlfriend, Joy Lane, for not, quote, talking to him, unquote. And when he pointed the gun at Mr. Goodwin, he said, "Say Joy Lane," and he said it, got him. Dr. Langman, I'm sure you have been following this case, and there is a lot you can tell us. Basically, just from what you have found out from the news media, what can you tell us about the psychology behind Steven Stevens?
You know, at this point, there's not a whole lot to go on, so anything we say is speculation. And keeping that in mind, you know, referring back to my research on school shooters and other types of killers, I typically look at them as falling into one of three categories. So if it's okay, I'll briefly go through those categories and then talk about where Steven may fit in. One of the categories is the psychopathic personality, and that's someone who's very narcissistic, doesn't have empathy, doesn't respect laws, morality, people's feelings, and so on. Just very narcissistic, self-centered, and never really takes responsibility for his own behavior, always is blaming other people for his problems. So that's one type in a nutshell. The second type is what I call the psychotic shooter, and these are people with significant mental illness, such as schizophrenia. So they're not really fully in touch with reality. They may be hearing voices telling them to kill people. They may have paranoid delusions, thinking that their lives are in danger and therefore they have to strike before they get shot themselves. So those are people who are not in touch with reality, suffering from mental illness, lashing out against the world for some psychotic reason in many cases, such as the voices or their delusions. The third type is what I call the traumatized shooter. And these are people who have had just horrendous family backgrounds, growing up amid violence, domestic violence, childhood abuse, sometimes sexual abuse, just chronic, severe dysfunction year after year after year until they snap and lash out against the world. So keeping those three types in mind.
Right. Who do you think, where do you think Steve Stevens falls in this, in these categories?
Well, as I said, we don't have a lot to go on, but if I had to speculate, I would see most evidence for putting him in the psychopathic category. And I can give a few reasons why I'm thinking along that line.
Okay.
First, there was remarkable calmness as he approached the victim and in the aftermath of the attack. Calm, cool, and collected, having just committed murder, is something that you see among psychopathic killers. They just don't have the same empathy, remorse, the same feeling for other people that most humans do. So there's something missing in terms of his empathy. He even referred to killing as fun in one of the videos he posted. And for people to have fun while killing another human being suggests not only the lack of empathy, but perhaps a sadistic personality that really gets a sense of thrill, excitement, pleasure from having the power to take another human life.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as I said, psychopaths don't take responsibility for their own behavior. So everything that goes wrong in their lives is always seen as someone else's fault. And in this case, he blamed his ex-girlfriend as if she were responsible for his seeking out a random individual and killing him. He also blamed his workplace in one of the videos as well. So again, this displacing of responsibility onto others is typical behavior for someone with a psychopathic personality. In addition, do you have a question?
Oh, I'm sorry. Please continue. No, please continue. You're much more interesting than me, so please continue.
Okay. One of his friends was interviewed who knew him in childhood, and that person reported that Stephen had engaged in torturing his own pets. And animal cruelty at a young age is often seen as a forerunner for adult psychopathic behavior. And that's just one more example of the lack of empathy that you would expect to see in someone, especially in a child, towards his own pets. And finally, you have the fact that he not only killed someone, but filmed it and then posted it online. He was seeking fame, and given the narcissism of a psychopathic personality, it would not be surprising that he wants to become famous for something as atrocious, as horrible as killing an innocent person.
It is unbelievable. Now, you've talked about, Dr. Langman, about Stephen Stevens' friends from his early childhood and how one of his friends said that he tortured his pets. If I'm not mistaken, he specifically had a little canary, and it had crawled up on his finger, and he slapped it so hard off of his finger that it killed the bird, and he just kind of laughed. Another neighbor who was interviewed, who knew him recently, said that she thought maybe he was gay, and maybe that's what he was struggling with. He was apparently very awkward around women. But nobody really said that he was mean or nasty, just that he was kind of awkward, maybe a little shy. Now, what is interesting, Dr. Langman, is his job. His job was at another mental health facility, working on some sort of team building, I think, with kids. That just appalled me. Can somebody keep in this type of anger and madness so well that they can get a job helping others at a mental health institution? Is that something that we can really expect?
Well, you know, people with a psychopathic personality can often be very functional. And there's also a psychopathic quality referred to as impression management, which means they know how to fool people. They know how to put on a good front. If you think of a con artist, someone who knows how to con people while planning to exploit or hurt them. So I don't know, that could have been going on, or it could have been he had some psychopathic traits but held it together as long as his life was going relatively okay. But it sounds like in the last couple years or so, he had multiple blows to his identity, to his livelihood as well, and in the face of those blows, it seems like then his rage became overwhelming. So, for example, in 2015, he filed for bankruptcy. Just this January, he was evicted from his apartment. He was deeply in debt. He wasn't doing well with his girlfriend. So it does seem like it wasn't just his personality, but personality plus one major stress after another put him on the path of violence.
Would it surprise you, and I have no idea, I'm just throwing this out there, it's an idea, I have nothing to base it on, would it surprise you to find out he was perhaps maybe sexually abused as a young child?
That would not surprise me. Among school shooters, for example, there's a fair number who have been sexually abused as children, either within their families, in the neighborhood, maybe in foster care if they ended up there. So that is something that you do come across among some killers.
I remember the 11-year-old, I believe his name was Mitchell.
No,
I think that was his first name.
Andrew Golden and Mitchell Johnson committed a school shooting together. Mitchell was 13. Andrew was the 11-year-old.
Okay. And I believe the 13-year-old had been sexually abused. Do you remember that?
Yes, that's the Jonesboro shooting in 1998. It was March 24th, so we just passed the anniversary of it recently. And Mitchell, as I said, was 13 years old at the time. He had reportedly been horribly molested, raped by an older boy in the neighborhood for approximately 4 years, and that was, you know, absolutely devastating to him. So that's one example of a sexually abused child committing murder at a very young age.
Exactly. We're talking with Dr. Peter Langman. Dr. Langman is a world-renowned expert on school shootings and in shootings in general, as far as what we've had here yesterday, the horrible, they call him the Facebook killer, Steven Stevens, killing a wonderful grandfather and father, Robert Goodwin, he was 74, I believe, just pulled up and shot him because he was mad at his girlfriend, and he was taking it out on the world. But, Dr. Langman, you have a great website called schoolshooters.info, and I encourage everybody to go there. It has a list of your books, every one of them fascinating. But let's face it, there's a lot of people that are sexually abused, horribly abused, that have a problem with their girlfriend, that file for bankruptcy, that get made fun of, that are struggling with their sexuality. None of them do these horrible things like Stevens did yesterday, like this horrible killing. And what scares me is, this is a two-part question, it's going to be long and I apologize, but what scares me is this is just kind of the stepping stone for this happening more and more. So, first question, why him, why now, why not everybody who goes through what Steven Stevens did? And secondly, do you think this is going to lead to more copycats, let's file this up on Facebook and get attention type situations?
You know, I'm glad you made that point about many people are abused, many people go through difficulties, and they never pick up a gun. You know, I talked about those three categories. Well, most people in those categories do not commit murder. So that's a first step in understanding them. But that's not the complete explanation. And that's why I was talking about the combination of Stephen's personality as well as all these things that happened to him, going bankrupt, breaking up with the girlfriend, and so on. Most people can handle those stresses. Most people have a sense of morality, a sense of empathy. No matter how angry we are, we wouldn't kill somebody. There's things that keep us in line and able to manage our emotions and get through a tough period without turning to violence. But if you're psychopathic, you don't have those same inhibitors. You don't have a sense of morality. You don't have a sense of empathy because nothing's ever your fault in your own mind. You always feel like the victim, so you feel justified in lashing out when, you know, one bad thing after another happens. So it's a combination of many factors, including, you know, the individual psychology as well as all the life events that someone experiences.
We do have a question from our audience. Which type of the three that you mentioned is the most common? The psychopathic, narcissistic, the schizoid, and the traumatized. Which one is the most common among shooters?
Okay, just to clarify, for the psychotic, it's not schizoid, it would be schizophrenic. Or in some cases, there's another diagnosis called schizotypal personality disorder. That's not a widely known term among the population. I generally stick to psychotic because that's simpler for people. You know, based on my research, the most common of the three types is the psychotic. And that may be surprising because I've seen many shooters reported on repeatedly in the media and sometimes even in scholarly sources that don't mention their schizophrenia, their psychotic symptoms, and so on. There's so much focus typically on bullying as the cause that people often ignore, you know, mental health issues.
Mm-hmm. So the psychotic is the most common. Now, let's go back here because I feel very strongly the only way we're ever going to stop all of this craziness is to understand it first. And that doesn't mean I'm saying, you know, coddle the criminal and, you know, give them more hugs and nothing like that. It just drives me crazy when people accuse me of that. So I can feel you out there thinking that, people, and that's not what I'm doing here. We need to understand all of this so we can recognize it early on in children and prevent them from growing up to becoming a Stephen Stevens. So, okay, let's go back to the sexually abused, you know, has been bullied, all of that. What is it in them? Is it something organic in their brain? Is it a problem with their frontal lobes? What can we do, Dr. Langman, to stop this person from growing up to becoming a madman?
You know, I don't know that there's anything we can do to stop certain things like psychopathic personality traits being passed on in genetics or, you know, schizophrenia perhaps being passed on. But what we can do is educate people to recognize the warning signs of potential violence. And this is the concept of threat assessment that people in schools and law enforcement and communities as well should be educated into basic warning signs that someone might be on the path of violence and to know who to go to when you see that, and for people in law enforcement and education to know how to investigate those warning signs, because it might be meaningless. It might have been a joke. It might have been something someone said in anger with no intention of carrying out the threat, but it might well be a serious threat that someone intends to carry out. So it's the concept of threat assessment, and I can talk more about that if you'd like.
I would, because let's face it, a lot of times people do say things in anger. I'm going to kill him. I'm going to blow this place up. How do you determine which is a real threat and which is blowing off steam? Or do you treat somebody blowing off steam as they're really going to do it? How do you handle it, and what? Tell us what to do.
Well, for example, if you're working in a school, and a threat is brought to your attention, maybe it's someone overheard in the hallway saying to a kid, if you do that one more time, I'm going to kill you. Mm-hmm. Something that could just be talk, but may not be, and we don't know that yet. Ideally, the school will have personnel on its team in the administration, faculty, guidance counseling department, whatever they have there, school psychologists perhaps, people who are trained to investigate that threat. And those teams should be on the lookout for what's called leakage, when people leak their intentions, either by saying something out loud, by posting it online, by writing about it in a school paper that they hand in a journal somewhere, or what's called attack-related behavior, which means any behavior someone engages in that suggests or indicates they're moving towards committing an act of violence. And that could be writing a hit list. It could be buying weapons illegally. It could be stockpiling explosives, you know, practicing building bombs at home. It could be diagramming the school about where to set up a bomb or where to set up a sniper position or how to get into the school without being noticed while carrying a firearm. Anything that indicates they're planning an attack. So if a student's heard making what may just be an offhand comment, you know, you'd have to interview the student, interview the people who heard the comment, maybe the friends who know him, maybe check with the teachers. Have you heard anything? Have any of his assignments that he's handed in suggested he's planning violence? You know, sometimes students' papers have been remarkably violent, even including statements about getting guns and because they're going to kill people. And if you don't respond to those, you're missing the obvious warning signs. So the team would investigate by interviewing people and maybe checking his internet activity while at school. If there's reason to get the police involved, then they could confiscate his computer at home, get a search warrant, you know, search the premises for firearms, explosives, etc. So there's a lot of things that can be done, but it all starts with people reporting what they hear. And there's a saying that some school safety programs use called see something, say something. It's a simple way to get the message out to students and faculty, you know, see something, say something.
And I agree with that, and I think most people would. But are we becoming dangerously close to being the thought police? Because you have a thought doesn't mean you're going to carry it out. I do understand, absolutely, if somebody says something that is very violent or threatening, you should look into it. But again, Dr. Langman, what if the person says these horrible, terrible things and there's nothing else to show that they've got anything planned? Do you force them into therapy?
Well, then there's no harm done in it. You know, if someone says some threats, some what sounds like dangerous, horrible things like you're saying, if there's no evidence of attack-related behavior, there's no indication that they really mean to carry out any violence against anybody, then at least you've looked into it, ruled it not a current threat. No harm is done. You haven't suspended the person, expelled the person, had the person arrested. All you've done is conducted a little inquiry. However, if the person does intend violence and you don't conduct that investigation, how is everyone going to feel afterwards when people have died and they had that clue and no one acted on it?
Very good point. Let's talk about Stephen Stevens a little bit more here, because I'm sure we're going to be finding out a lot more about him. Just like we said earlier, neighbors are being interviewed. Some saying he was very nice and polite, others saying awkward among women, and there's even one person that knew him that said that she felt he was struggling with his sexuality. And I'm kind of putting you out on a limb here, Dr. Langman, so forgive me in advance, but a good educated guess, what do you think we're going to find in Stephen's background as the days progress?
Boy, that is putting me out on a limb.
It is, but you know, you get paid the big bucks from me, so, you know, which is zero.
It's possible that there will be some evidence of mental health issues. You know, I wouldn't be surprised if it turned out he did have some psychotic symptoms after all, even though I'm initially suggesting more of the psychopathic based on the little bit we know. I think going back to the fact that he posted this online, and as you said, that's extremely rare. That's very significant as a piece of behavior. And I think when we see people that desperate for fame, they often feel like they're an absolute nobody, and they're so desperate to become somebody that the only thing they can think to do is to kill somebody. And if you want, I'd like to...
Please continue.
Okay.
No, please continue.
You know, he's not the first person to do this. And in 2015, a man named Vester Flanagan committed murder on live television, gunning down a reporter and the cameraman.
That's right.
And then he filmed that. Apparently, as he did it, he used his phone to film it and then posted that on Facebook. Now, just a few weeks after that, a young man named Chris Harper Mercer in Oregon wrote about that incident on his blog. And then a few weeks later, he committed a school shooting at Umpqua Community College in Oregon. And I just want to take a moment to read what Chris Harper Mercer wrote about Vester Flanagan, because I think it sheds light on Steve Stevens, if that's okay.
Okay. Yes, absolutely.
Right. So Chris Harper Mercer wrote, "I've noticed that so many people like him," referring to Vester Flanagan, "are all alone and unknown, yet when they spill a little blood, the whole world knows who they are. A man who was known by no one is now known by everyone. His face splashed across every screen, his name across the lips of every person on the planet, all in the course of one day. Seems the more people you kill, the more you're in the limelight." And, as I said, 4 weeks after writing that, he went on his own murderous rampage. So I think when
were there any clues other than what he just wrote, do you know? Or was this one of those ones where it came out of nowhere and was a big surprise?
I don't think he made any threats to anybody. I'm not aware of any leakage. He didn't really have friends, so it's not like he was talking to people. Also, he was not a kid. You see more of the leakage, the loose lips, if you want to call it that, among the middle school and high school shooters. Chris Harper Mercer was 26 at the time of his attack, and among adult shooters, you don't see so much of that leakage.
Right.
But
they learned to hide it better.
Yeah, he clearly was impressed by Vester Flanagan. He even wrote that, you know, quote, "it's a short video, but good nonetheless." So here's a guy praising a video of two people being killed as a good video.
Yeah, and that's a big time.
Yeah, that focus on the more you kill, the more you're in the limelight, I think that captures a powerful motive for some of these killers, that they feel like they're absolutely nobody, they're going nowhere in their lives, and the best thing they can come up with is to make themselves famous.
By doing this. It's just so frightening. I don't believe we mentioned this, but Stevens is dead. He killed himself after the police found him. Apparently, according to TMZ, he was in the McDonald's drive-thru and somebody recognized him and said that he'd have to wait on his fries while they called the police, which is a really smart thing to do. And he waited for a little bit and then he just said, never mind. But it was long enough. He paused long enough that, according to TMZ, the police were able to catch up with him and start the chase, in which he turned the gun on himself. No surprise there, right, Dr. Lang?
No. That's not unusual. Certainly among school shooters, about 50% die in their attacks. That's part of the plan. They go in knowing they're going to die. Now, in his case, it looked like he didn't intend to die. It was only when escape became impossible that he decided to end his life. So he was trying to survive and make his getaway, and he succeeded for a couple of days, but when the police closed in, that's when he ended his life.
Right, and that I think a lot of people were expecting that at some point, because he certainly didn't seem like the type of man that would stand up and accept responsibility for what he did. Like you said, Dr. Lang, he blamed his girlfriend, and mm-hmm. apparently he had girlfriend problems for quite some time. Dr. Lang, you have a book out, your latest book. Tell us about that, please.
Okay, my latest book is called School Shooters, Understanding High School, College, and Adult Perpetrators. And I profile 48 school shooters in different categories and do a lot of comparing and contrasting, because across the three types of the psychotic, the psychopathic, and the traumatized, there's a lot of similarities within each group, a lot of differences between the groups. And I also look at differences between the secondary school shooters, the college shooters, and what I call aberrant adult shooters. So there's a lot of different ways you can subdivide the population of school shooters. And when you do that, you see a lot of interesting patterns, and it helps us to, you know, understand what's driving some of these different perpetrators.
Well, I would encourage everybody to pick up the book and also go to your incredible website. It is filled with fascinating information, and it is imperative, my friends, that we all learn about this, okay? Doesn't mean, I'm going to say it again, doesn't mean we're coddling the criminal. We're not saying they didn't get enough hugs. We have to understand it. And because of people like Dr. Peter Langman and his schoolshooters.info website, we are given the opportunity to know what to look for and to understand what is happening in these people's minds. Don't be afraid to say something. If somebody is acting crazy and saying they're going to take all these people out, better safe than sorry. Say something rather than regret not saying something, just like Dr. Langman said earlier. Dr. Langman, again, very informative, fascinating. I love having you on. I'm sorry for the reason. But hopefully someday you'll be out of work as far as school shooters go. Let's hopefully we can get that under control. And, you know, I'm not saying that you shouldn't be working. I'm just saying hopefully we won't have to have a school shooters website at some point in our lifetimes. Do you think that'll ever happen? Will we ever get this under control?
I think we're making progress. I don't know that we'll ever eliminate violence, but we can certainly do more than we're doing now, spread the information, and, as you said, put me out of a job, at least as relating to school shooters. That's the goal.
There you go. That's the goal. Schoolshooters.info, Dr. Peter Langman, thank you so much for educating us and spending your valuable time with us. We all appreciate it. Take care
thank
now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, people. I don't even know what to say anymore. I feel numb. I'm exhausted. Bessie, help me here.
Yeah. Well,
how do you feel? I mean, it's just
numbing. No, I feel the same as you do. It's frightening. The randomness of it is so frightening.
That's right.
It makes no sense. There's no motive, you know. He had no motive against this man. And he just picked him out of the blue. And it could have been me or it could have been you. And those are the types
exactly.
of shootings that are murders that are so frightening. It wasn't over drugs. It wasn't over some, you know, dispute. It was just a person who happened to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. And it could be anyone on the planet. So,
and that,
you know,
like you said.
And the uptick in that kind of murder is alarming. And, I mean, I totally agree. If you think someone is acting strangely, don't be afraid, you know, to drop a dime and speak up. Because if you're wrong, hey, you're wrong. But there's that slight chance maybe that person is nearing the tipping point, and let's catch him before he does.
or she.
So, yeah, all scary, but really informative listening to Dr. Langman. He had some good information.
He did. I love listening to him. And like I said, I really do want to put him out of work someday. But this just, it all goes back to something that I've been harping on since the beginning of my show. I started this show in 2011. And that is, we need to recognize these problems in our children. First of all, we have to stop parental abuse. Big problem. I'm not talking about,
yes,
you know, obviously, no hitting and no beating and all of that. But let me tell you, there are many other ways to abuse a child. And I've said this before. My very well-respected psychologist said he can treat people who have been physically abused. It's much harder to treat somebody who's been emotionally abused. And the hardest person to treat is the one who has been completely ignored. So,
yes,
if you think yelling at your kids is okay, it's not. You know what?
No.
Trust me. They may hit 40 and just lose it. So, everybody, you can't be a perfect parent. Everybody's going to mess up. But understand, yelling and screaming at your kids and degrading them and telling them they're stupid or whatever, no, don't do it. Because you know what? Here you go. Here's an example of maybe what might happen. You don't know when you're abusing your kid how it's going to turn out. And you may not even think it is abuse, but it is. Let me tell you. Do you agree, Bessie? You can disagree. That's fine. I won't be upset.
No, I totally agree. It's, you might create a self-fulfilling prophecy. You know, you tell someone that they're stupid long enough, and then they will behave in a stupid manner.
Exactly.
Or have no self-worth. Yeah, they will have no self-worth.
You scream at them all the time. Right.
Or you scream at them. And so then their own lives, you know, to themselves become valueless. So they don't care. And they react accordingly. And they have no respect for themselves, so they have no respect for others. And, you know, bonding with a child, too, begins at, you know, at childbirth or even before. And it's very important to look your child in the eye, you know, stroke your child as an infant. Look at them in the eye, sing to them, talk to them, play with them. I remember I knew a mother, you know, her child, you know, fortunately grew up to be a really upstanding young man. But I would watch her feed that baby, and she would shake her knee with the bottle in the mouth, and she would never look down at the baby, you know, or coo to him or all those little, you know, mommy noises we make with our baby.
Right.
She never did any of that, and she would never look at him. She would be watching the TV and the whole time never look at him. And I used to think that was the oddest thing. And, you know, we know that all of that, that starts at childbirth, really, developing that bond.
It really does.
And a healthy personality starts then.
Exactly.
So love your children and treat them as they deserve to be treated.
Exactly, because you don't know what your abuse, even though if you don't think it is abuse, you don't know what it will do to your child. Granted, they may not grow up to be a killer, but they could grow up to be somebody that all they hear in their head is your voice criticizing them over and over and over, and it cripples them. Criticism granted, everybody, you need constructive criticism. You don't need, you know, for God's sakes, why the hell are you doing that? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard, blah, blah. You know, you don't need that. I get so furious when I see parents yelling at kids. And I am not a perfect mom. I have already apologized to my 20-year-old for my shortcomings. But for a child to know they're loved and for a child to know that their parent isn't perfect, and I think if a parent apologizes, if you've done anything that you regret, let your child know that, hey, I get it, I was wrong, and I'm very sorry. That goes so far. You know, my father was an abuser. He did it to my brother, and it was awful. It was I go to sleep hearing that screaming, and I wake up, and it's still here, and I can't. It's really hard to get rid of. And he didn't do it to me. I was just there, you know, and I tried to stop it. I tried to be that happy girl. I get my allowance, and I buy everybody presents because maybe for 10 minutes, my dad wasn't yelling. and my brother wasn't yelling. And oh my God, it's just awful. If I could really stop every person on the planet from doing that to their children. You don't abuse, you don't physically abuse, you don't yell, and you do not ignore them. Because when you ignore them, they think that they have no self-worth whatsoever.
Right.
Again, not even close to the perfect parent here. I just kind of know not what to do. I sort of know what not to do. Okay, I'm not saying I know exactly what to do, but okay. On that happy note, let's give a little teaser, Miss Bessie. We're going to do something different at Web Sleuths. It's very different, and it is going to get people riled up. And Bessie, without giving away what it is, what do you think will be the reaction to this when we do it?
Great. Put me on the.
Put you right on the spot. I think a lot of people will be upset, but they'll like it.
Right. And I think many members will be very pleased because we've had requests for this type of new thing. And I hope that it will be, beneficial to the site. And not an encumbrance.
That's what I'm hoping.
Or, not to become, not something that we, say, oh, God, and just don't want to deal with. Right. But I don't think so. I think that it's going to be an asset. And so I expect a mixed reaction, but more positive than negative.
Yeah, I hope so. And let me just tell you, if you get your feelings hurt, if your little feelers get hurt all the time, you don't want to be anywhere near what we're going to be doing. Okay, you've just got to be able to take it, and you can't report to a mod and have a mod protect you. You've got to go in there head first and see what everybody else is doing. And that's all I can say. It will be happening soon, hopefully by next week. And, we shall see. If Bessie and I come on and it sounds like we have chewed off our own arms up to our elbows, you'll know that it didn't work. And it was a little more stressful than we had anticipated. But it will be interesting, so stay tuned for that. And Bessie, thank you. It's good to have you back. And we will be back next week. And Bessie, next week I think we'll be able to talk a lot more about our new project that you're going to have
I think we'll be ready.
My darling angels. Dr. Peter Langman, thank you again so much for joining us, everybody. Thank you for jumping onto WebSleuths.com and for listening to Web Sleuths Radio. Take care and be safe. Good night.
Good night.